For me, the role of making artworks is to open discussion.
We are so used to wanting to get an easy answer, but you don't offer any of this.
I really believe in taking risks. So I'm interested in making longer films, but it has to be done away.
Ich begrüße Sie herzlich zu einer neuen Folge von Talking Heads, dem Podcast der Weserburg Museum für Moderne Kunst. Mein Name ist Janneke de Vries und ich bin die Direktorin hier am Haus. Meine Gästin ist heute die israelische Künstlerin Yael Watanah, weshalb ich nun ins Englische wechseln werde. Dear Yael, welcome to our podcast and thank you for taking the time. Just to let the listeners know, you are in Berlin in your studio at the moment, and I'm sitting in my office in Bremen, and we are talking via Zoom, just to give the context. Yael, let me shortly introduce you to the listeners, and please feel free to interrupt me, to correct me wherever it's necessary. You were born 1970 in Israel and currently live in Amsterdam and Berlin. Your artistic work is concentrated mostly on film, but also includes photography, neon works, performances, objects, and projects in the public space. This year especially, you have several solo and group shows all over the world. Maybe just to mention your participation in the current Venice Biennial, where you show a huge project in the German pavilion parallel to the artist Erza Montag. And this German pavilion got a lot of very positive reactions in the media. And we here at the Weserburg have your solo show Utopia Now, currently running until November 24th this year, with four films, one of them a world premiere, and three neon works. And just the short information for the listeners that we are sitting here on September 18th, 2022. So this is the context of our conversation, your show here at the Weserburg, but also, of course, your general approach and Venice and whatever this conversation will get us. But I suggest to start our little play or question answer with a smooth and maybe easy warm up. The first question, where and how did you grow up?
How?
Yeah, how?
So I grew up in a small village in the north of Israel, a place called Kfar Yecheskel. It's an actually it was established before the state of Israel, so in 1921. It's an agricultural small village among many of the kibbutzim. So it's a quite beautiful part of in the north. And yes, I lived there until the age of 18. Then I had to go to the military service, like most Israelis at my generation didn't really question this position, you know, as a citizen. So, and after that, I traveled in Africa, wanted to be a National Geographic photographer.
Ah, that was the start. I didn't know that. That's
yeah,
nice.
Yeah, that was my dream to be in this, that my picture will appear in the National Geographic magazines. Because actually, I photographed since I was very, very young. So it just was part of my upbringing. Then I went to art school, to photography department. Somehow I ended up in art. I don't know. It was not really my plan to be in art school, but I ended up being in the Jerusalem School of Art, Bezalel, yeah.
But you went there with the idea of becoming a geographic photographer still, or was it also there the interest to do it on a more artistic level?
No, it was not. I didn't know what I want to do. I just went to school to get a degree. But of course, when you're in the context of art, things are changing and your mind is changing and the conversation is changing. And actually, after 2 years in the photography department, I was drawn into more video art. Video, it was very, very small, undeveloped sort of unit of, you know, making videos. I spent half a year in Toronto in a film school, taught myself cinema. And then I came back and I graduated with a video art installation in the photography department.
That was in Jerusalem then?
In Jerusalem. And I won the best prize of the school for this installation. And then I thought I reached the peak of my career and I don't have to be anymore an artist. And then I quit. Then I actually, I was not really making art for some years. And then I left Israel in 96. For personal and political reasons, I felt like I have to distance myself from the place. I started to develop a very critical thinking towards the place that I grew up in. Mm-hmm. And I spent a lot of time with the Israelis abroad and negotiating our homeland in a very critical way. And that led me into thinking maybe I should turn into becoming an artist because I have a lot to say and explore. And so somehow the reason I wanted to become an artist was actually to understand, it started by I wanted to understand the place that I grew up in, namely Israel. This is a short introduction for my first 30 years.
Quick and dirty.
Yeah. And so I started to develop and I was at the Rijksakademie. Before that, I was actually at the School of Visual Art, started my master degree, but I left to move to Amsterdam to do the Rijksakademie for 2 years. And that really a very important moment for me because I had a lot of support to develop my works from the Netherlands in this context of the Rijksakademie. I was back and forth between Amsterdam and Israel and I started to film my early works that dealt with a lot of trying to understand the construction of the state identity, national identity through rituals, through state rituals, through military rituals, and social rituals. So let's say the early works was me and my camera observing the place that was familiar to me, but from a critical distance and what I called myself at that time, the amateur anthropologist, because I'm not an anthropologist, but I observed what I framed as a clan, you know, the clan. And so my early project were very, very sort of simple productions, very much based on documenting the reality. And then, later on, I started to also create small staged rituals and more like engaging myself in activism and very much spending a lot of time in occupied territories and deepening my research on the statue, how things were, you know, the reality. What is the role of artists and art in this political sphere, in this political debates, the political reality, what can we do as artists? That was became my interest.
There was so much input. I just try to go on and go back. Maybe just so you just described that you traveled a lot between Amsterdam and Israel, but then there was a time you also moved to Germany, which is from my point of view very hard, tough cut as an Israeli artist. And why was the choice for Germany?
I was a lot between Europe and making my films in Israel and Palestine, but I traveled a lot, you know, everywhere. And that was a period also I lived longer, like about 3 years in Tel Aviv, between Tel Aviv and Amsterdam. And then I included also Berlin. And for personal reasons, I moved to Berlin. But before that, there was a point in my artistic research was like the impact of European history on the creation of Israel. And that's where I started to develop the project Endure Will Be Stand, you know, the Polish trilogy that lasted 6 years. So then I spent a lot of time in Poland before moving to spending time in Germany, because of course trying to understand the construction of a nation state, you know, that the early Zionist leaders took all the ideas from Europe. And so I was interested to explore this connection, the relationship, and also, you know, create alternative histories in order to kind of explore it and deepen my thinking about collective memory and the use of memory in politics. Actually, the first work that I created in the context of Germany was during the time that I still worked on a Polish trilogy. It was between 2009 and 2011. 2009, I created the second part of the Polish trilogy, and the last part of the Polish trilogy was in 2011, preparing for the Polish Pavilion in Venice, and that was in 2010. I worked with the non-existing paintings of Otto Dix, the war cripples.
Yeah.
So that's the first time that I started to think about Germany through art, through artists from the 20th century, and how to sort of update the artworks through an eye of a contemporary artist.
I didn't realize that War Cripples, the film in your work, is Entartete Kunst lebt. That's the title of this work. That is really the first work in your artistic career that you are dealing with German art, German national identity or whatever. Mm. And I'm very happy to hear that, because we at the moment at your show here at Weserburg, we are showing this film. It's part of our exhibition, Utopia Now. And you already talked about your critical position against national identities. You lived all over the world. And my question is, do you have a feeling for something you would call home from your point of view now? And if so, what is it? Is it really a country? No.
It's complex. It's complex on a personal level. It's complex on a bigger level. But I find what gives me a sense of home at the moment is not a territory, not a borders, not an identity card, but actually language. So where I feel comfortable to speak my language, it happens to be Hebrew, you know, because of history, for several reasons. It's now I'm speaking Hebrew. I could probably also speak Polish if my grandparents never left Poland, you know, or Russia, whatever. But my mother tongue is Hebrew. So at the moment, I would say this is what gives me somehow a sense of familiarity. But yeah, I don't know otherwise what to say about it. I think it's one of the things that I'm interested to also explore, especially given politics now, everything is so fragile and everything is so boring. It's really the party time of the right wing. They're having a big party.
Yeah.
Of course, it makes you really wonder what is to be done and what do we have to do? What do we speak? What do we have to speak out? I mean, the first work, you know, in Weserburg is the Neon Crisis, which is extremely relevant. Mm-hmm. We ended up selecting very good works that kind of touch various issues that we experience in reality today, and they don't have a specific location. They're quite universal in a sense, even though the way I work, I refer to certain things that are very specific, but I also try to open up and say this is actually quite universal. And this is what happens also in terms of the way I worked. I worked in Israel and I try to interrogate the construction of nation states and how it comes through images. And it is a very specific terrain, very specific context, but I try to open it up to speak on a larger aspect of things, because there are many similarities, you know, in this idea. And we know that nations are imagined community. It was said by Benedict Anderson, you know, like in the 90s already, the way it speak about it. So how to relate to each other through symbols, through ritual.
All these constructions. Yeah.
And it also is a lot about inclusion and exclusion. That's one of the main, and it is a myth. You know, we create a myth to relate yourself to a certain territory. So all the problems that rise with this, I'm interested to explore. And then I end up doing sometimes very provocative projects that are very ambiguous and people don't really understand where I position myself. But it's part of the artistic method.
You're talking about what do you talk right now? Is it Maika Germania or just in general?
Yeah, in general. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Because I experienced this with the film Maika Germania. This is also part of our show. I experienced that people really struggle with this kind of ambivalent position. They really want to get an answer. Is it redemption or is it not redemption? There's a messiah's figure or person in this film, but it doesn't bring the utopian idea of a better place, because at some point the draft of Albrecht Speer's Germania is coming up the Wannsee and all the shit comes, we as Germans really hope for that it's really, really sunk down to the bottom and it all comes up again. So it's really interesting, the ambivalent narration, if you can say narration, it's not really a narration, but scenario of the films, especially in Malka Germania, and how tough it is to deal with it for the viewers in front of it. We are so used to wanting to get an easy answer, but you don't offer any of this.
No, I think reality is much more difficult than my films. For me, the role of making artworks is to open discussion and to help us to deal through art with the dark side of our life, with the ghost of history, with demons that are coming out of the bottle, you know, because there should be a lot more work done by politicians to give us a better society, a better hope. I'm not a politician, I'm an artist. Maybe this might trigger people to say, hey, maybe instead of Nazi coming, the return of Nazi to Germany, maybe we need to work really hard to avoid the return. And I mean, thinking that this was done 3 years ago and the AfD is now so strong now in Germany. So it's almost like more prophecy than messianic redemption. It's like,
yeah. Yeah. And talking about redemption, our show Utopia Now is running until November this year. But the title of your exhibition at Jüdisches Museum in Berlin in 2021 was Redemption Now, not Utopia Now. So you change from redemption to utopia these days within the last 3 years. Why the step from redemption to utopia?
I think no, you shouldn't really look at me as a chronological artist, because I'm interested in non-linear history. I'm interested in non-linear editing. So it's not like a chronological in that sense that first, oh, I dealt with redemption. Okay, now I move to utopia. It's not the consequence of one after the other. Redemption Now made a lot of sense in the context of the Jewish Museum, because I focused on making a new film, Malka Germania. It was commissioned by the Jewish Museum. And mm-hmm. in that context, I thought the Redemption Now make sense as a title. And then our selection of works tap into this idea of utopia, you know, in a more complex way. You know, we know that utopia is something you never reach, you know. We know, and utopia and dystopia coming together. So there is a paradoxical understanding of it. And I mean, the neon new work, Utopia Now, is also like it's falling apart. It's connecting to futurist sort of design a little bit. My idea was aesthetically connect to the time of fascism in Italy and futurism, the mm-hmm. dynamic movement in the graphic modernity, modernism, progress, but at the same time supporting fascism. I'm interested in complexities. I'm interested to show the entanglement of things and how one lead to each other. Not always the one who comes with good news, but I want us to look at it and think about it. And some works are more hopeful than others. For example, the new work from Brazil, it is fascination of the possibility of music to put us together in, you know, an exciting place and create, celebrate unity, celebrate almost something that is impossible, to connect Yiddish music and candomblé drumming. You know, it's like, it's almost the impossible that becomes possible. And it's shifting the reception of Yiddish music. It's shifting the drumming into something else. So it takes, there is something that also speak about specifically Brazil, that, you know, the different diasporas, different layers of history. We know it's all results of very, very tough history, a lot of very violent history. Yeah. And those songs wanted to commemorate this, the tough history, but also to show the hope, and music gives hope to people. So, you know, so.
Yeah, also with it, this is underlined by the title of this work, right?
Yeah.
It's the title is We Are Here.
Yeah.
And we face our really violent past, but we are still here and we can create something new to go on. Facing this work, especially, I really don't know how you find the power to do such works, because you just touched it. We're living in so horrible times, the Middle East conflict, the rise of the right wing party all over the world, especially in Germany, the war in Ukraine, the climate catastrophe. This list is endless. And you already described yourself as kind of activist, a very decidedly socially active artist. Do you really still believe that art, your art, can make the world a better place, can make a contribution, can help to change something for the better? Or isn't it what you really want to, if you try to get people into deeper thinking?
I'm not expecting myself to change the world from the art I make. I don't think it's what we can do. But I think we can educate people to think differently. You know, art can help us imagine something different and help us to be critical, can help us think in a way that stepping away from the dangerous thinking of many politicians that are trying to narrow down society, that are going backwards in many ways, that are so afraid of otherness, of the other, and using a lot of brainwashing to fuck up the mind of people. And so our job is even greater. We have to keep on, and institutions have to keep on supporting, and schools have to keep supporting artists to dare to take risk. We have to stay away from the market that demands certain kind of way of art making. We need to be brave. We need to keep on going and ask the hard questions, because it's very powerful. And don't forget, it all comes through aesthetics. And also look back what artists have done in times of confusion, because I mean, 100 years ago, it was more or less the same. Not surprising that surrealism get a lot of interest right now, but you know, exhibitions about surrealist art, because I mean, it is a kind of nonsense in many ways. What's happening? Detachment from reality maybe helps somehow.
Yeah, maybe. In some of your works, you really get back to what is a visual language from the past. Mm-hmm. Not in every film, but in Malka Germania, for example, in Zukunftsbewältigung, in the project you did for the German Pavilion at the Venice Biennial. And I already told you the story, but maybe it's your answers also interesting for the listeners too, that I did a guiding tour with our museum's friends in Venice. And there were some really strong reactions from their side. They were really into it and very in a positive way. But then there were strong reactions like, why did Yael Batana use such a formal language that is so poisoned with the German past? The use of a formal language and staging invented and used by the Nazis. Nobody should work with it anymore. And similar discussions take place in our show too, because two of your films also connect with the pathos or the exaggerated staging of, for example, of a by Leni Riefenstahl, or aspects of the former language the Nazis used. But why did you decide especially to cite this former language?
First of all, because I can.
Fair enough.
First of all, yeah, I mean, I know it's a taboo in Germany and the German artists will never dare to do it. I'm Israeli, I can do this, but it's not, I mean, I started referring to Leni Riefenstahl already from the Polish trilogy. In the Polish trilogy, in the first part of, you know, when the Sławomir Żurakowski is standing in the middle of the stadium and asking the return of Jews back to Poland. We already there refer to Leni's because it was for me a kind of a way to go through this horrific history through the aesthetics, but in a way correcting that history by, first of all, inviting Jews in the context of the stadium is already correcting history. The Olympic Stadium was never the place for the Jews. You know, in 1936, Jews were not allowed to enter. So for me, it was like historical justice. At the same time, I wanted to work with aesthetics because that's the only way you go deeper into this topic and remind us the context. And then I continue to sort of touch this taboo. I mean, one of the reasons why it's in the German pavilion, also it refers to Arno Brecker, Bereitschaft, when the sculpture of the mega naked man with a sword is, you know, in a readiness to go to the war. This time as a young man, of course, we see him super large. Of course, it recalls that history.
Mm-hmm. The projection is at the same place where the sculpture was placed, just to give this information.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And of course, for me, it's all connected. It's like to own the aesthetics, but actually to propose something that is different. That is, we're not getting ready to war. We want to give some hope that if everything goes really wrong on planet Earth, we have to just take off from the German pavilion with the spaceship. I mean, it's a little ironic also. And of course, I know it's difficult for Germans to find a space for humor because of the guilt aspect of the Germans towards the history. Of course, Leni Riefenstahl was horrible. I will never say that Leni Riefenstahl, she was at the same time a genius, the way she was making her films, but she was, of course, horrible, and she contributed greatly to the destruction of, you know, supporting the Nazis. Of course, I would never support her. I'm not admiring her by no means. It's not but I think for me, it was also very interesting, the interlink between the supremacy of the German and Jewish supremacy. And I'm allowed to say it because it is linked. In the 19th century, there were this idea of classifying Jews, you know, the good Jews, the bad Jews, the white Jews, the dark Jews, bringing all this to the, you know, to Palestine. And also for me, it was interesting to always see the relationship, aesthetic relation between Nazi cinema and Zionist cinema and Bolshevik cinema. So there are all these aesthetics. Yeah, I was interested to look at it and dive into it. And I know it's complex and not everyone is aware and not everyone is coming to this aesthetics and decision making with my baggage, let's say. Mm-hmm. I really believe in taking risks, and sometimes I fail maybe, and sometimes maybe I don't achieve what I would like to achieve. So this would be my very long answer to why.
Yeah, thank you for this. Who is a role model for you? Is there persons or works that had a huge impact on your work and your thinking?
I don't know if I have a role model. I feel it belongs to teenagers. You know, I'm not a teenager.
Yeah, no, you're not, but I like teenage thinking. So, but okay, we leave the word role model behind, but persons, works that are important in a way for you.
Yeah, I mean, there are many people who are, of course, you know, I learned a lot from different people, different writers, different thinkers, conversations that I have over the years. I'm in the business for more than 20 years. Different people I met over the years and creative, like in terms of...
So it's more about exchange with people...
Yeah,
from different disciplines than reading a special book or looking at a special film or something.
Yeah, I mean, of course, a lot of filmmakers and influence my, you know, and I started to become in dialogue with them through, for example, Stanley Kubrick, just one example, because he takes also quite large topics and try to make films around large topics. It's difficult for me to talk about the past, but I have a great exchange with Dorit Levite-Harten. She's part of the pavilion this year. She's a curator, art historian, science fiction lover, and Jewish mysticism. She studied with Gershom Shulem. She's definitely... is a great, you know, inspiration. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we can leave it like that. So...
it depends so much on topics I'm interested in. Depending what I'm actually interrogating and investigating, there are a lot of people that influence. But I don't have. I have to think if
Yeah, I see that and or hear that, and I find it very interesting that it's really obviously it's really much more about the exchange with different people than it's a passive observation of things people wrote or filmed or whatever. That's what I get from it.
No, it's a mix. Totally mixed. Well, I mean, of course, Hannah Arendt is someone who explains for you the on many levels. You know, so many things that still are so relevant, even written 100 years ago, she managed to explain in a very clear way. Unlike Walter Benjamin, that it's very hard to understand what he wants, you know.
Thank you for saying that. I feel so relieved.
Yeah. But I think that's the beauty, that it's so cryptic.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. But I'm reading a lot of history, so different historian, like, I don't know if you would know him, he explored a lot about Nazism, for example. Forgot his name now, Jesus. Maybe it will come back to me.
Yeah, come on. We go on. But there's another question comes to my mind. If I look at the cinema-like really perfect production and appearance of your newer films. I really question myself if you'd like to produce a film on a TV cinema level with the classical narration, with a start, with a high point and an ending. Is this interesting for you in any way?
First of all, yes, I'm interested in making longer films, but it has to be about Dunaway. So I don't think I will ever find a producer that will agree to give me money to make about Dunaway. I'm not sure because it's complex. Yeah, because there are so many great filmmakers. I'm an artist. I make video art. I tell story in a different way, so it has to stay my language. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about it seriously, but maybe it will never happen. Maybe this is something that I will it will be written in on my grave if I will have one. That she
but maybe it's, let's just think about or turn to what you are working on at the moment. What are your future projects or one project you're focusing now?
My main project right now is well-being.
Well, yeah, important. But on a work level, because I don't believe that there are no new ideas. I can't believe that.
No, I'm actually I'm truly slowing down a bit because I'm more into
You had a tough year.
Well, it was not just tough. It was very full, very demanding. It's like I feel like I have to do a little bit of nesting, you know, to calm down because the world is changing so quickly and not to the best. And the situation in the Middle East is super worrying. So it has to. Makes sense what to do next, you know. Actually, I've been producing a series of photographs recently for an exhibition in Milan, and I quite like it. Something very small, something very personal, that it's just me with my camera, and it's kind of joyful.
When will this show in Milan will open?
It's next month.
It opens okay, quite soon. Okay.
Yeah. It's I'm showing for the first time some of the. It's actually the show also is called Utopia now.
Oh, really? Oh, that's nice. Part two.
It's going to be the new film from Brazil, the new photo series, the neon work, and a small model of the spaceship.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, and I remember now the name of the historian that I was actually reading, and I had the most exciting exchange with him many years ago. Unfortunately, he passed away, very young man. His name is Boaz Neumann, Dr. Boaz Neumann.
Yeah, never heard. Okay.
But I would not call it role model. It's just people that I have had very intense discussion with many, many people because my project's so big. They demand a lot of expertise involved. They demand the involvement of Two Minutes to Midnight, the project around the question of what if women rule the world involve a lot of women. And so you meet so many interesting people along the way. So
yeah, maybe that's a good point to stop here. Thank you so much for taking the time for this conversation. We just can start giving some starting points for more thinking for people. I hope so. I'm quite sure that we did that. And also huge thank you to Vanessa Rolfing, who took care of the recording here.
And thank you, Vanessa.
Thank you, Vanessa. And I hope you, the listeners, had fun following this podcast and that you come back to the series Talking Heads, the podcast of the Weserburg Museum for Moderne Kunst. My name is Janneke de Vries and I say goodbye for now. Have a nice day.